It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Fairhead. Marijuana use is now fully legal in 24 states and Washington, D.C. This more tolerant attitude toward drug use has come with another trend. More people are driving under the influence.
A survey published in 2022 by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration found that more than 12 million people drove while under the influence of drugs, up from about 2 million in 2018. Most drivers were using cannabis.
In Wisconsin, the state health department has a public service video that shows someone reaching into the refrigerator case of a store and pulling out a six-pack. Instead of beer bottles, it's pill bottles with an opioid label.
Here's a dose of reality. There are nearly 2,000 drug-related crashes every year in Wisconsin. Help prevent drug-to-driving and let's achieve zero preventable deaths on Wisconsin roadways. Driving on pills kills.
Andrew Yockey studies the effects and risk factors of drug use as an assistant professor of public health at the University of Mississippi. Andrew, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me.
You have an article in The Conversation about drugged driving, and you open it by describing this accident in Coleman, Wisconsin. This is a village in Marinette County where a driver impaired by THC killed an 8-month-old infant in a 2023 accident. What stood out to you about this fatal crash?
Yeah, such a sad case. I think what really stood out to me was two things. One, the levels of THC in the driver, but then specifically how young the victim was. This is an accident that should have been prevented.
How does the problem of drug driving compare to drunken driving?
Yeah, so, you know, our research shows that actually drunk driving is a little higher. So if you take a national perspective, about 1 in 10 people drive under the influence of alcohol, but usually about 1 in 15 or 20 people now drive under the influence of marijuana and other drugs. So that actually that gap is slowly narrowing. And we're starting to see from even post-COVID data that drug driving is actually going to become more prevalent than drunk driving. So this is really a very scary time to be on the roads and actually see what people are doing behind the wheel.
As you watch this around the country, are states prioritizing this sort of impaired driving, or is it of lesser concern to law enforcement?
Yeah, you know, some states are prioritizing this. California, Wisconsin, even in Mississippi, where I am, we are looking at better ways to monitor drunk and drug driving. But this is actually kind of what I call kind of a silent problem. It's been happening for 20, 30 years, but due to a lot of lack of research and lack of detection methods, we're slowly falling behind the use of drug driving. And so I think states really need to hamper this in and enact and surveil this from multiple perspectives.
You quote the statistic from AAA that 20% of people who have driven under the influence of THC believe that their driving is better while high. Is there less of a taboo when it comes to this, or is this a myth?
Yeah, you know, I was actually shocked by that statistic too. And I think it has to deal with people's perceptions of marijuana and cannabis products, which has really favored in the positive realm. So we know that from multiple campaigns that driving under the influence of alcohol, of course, is deadly, but driving under the influence of cannabis, we really not only don't have enough information, but again, people see it in music videos, people see it in movies, and I think it's really become glamorized. And so really looking at this from a public health perspective, no amount of THC or cannabis in the system should be in your body while driving under the influence or driving a vehicle. So I think from my perspective, I really see this, again, a kind of a creeping problem, and more awareness and research needs to be done into this.
Many states like Wisconsin have really been battling an opioid crisis. I wonder, are there other drugs that are also a concern beyond cannabis?
Absolutely. Yeah. So drugs, whether illicit prescription, over the counter, can really impair your driving. The opioids, benzodiazepines can lead to impaired judgment, dizziness, drowsiness. But then on the opposite end, stimulants like cocaine and methamphetamine can actually lead to aggressive and reckless driving. And some of our newest research that we're trying to do here is there's been some several case reports of people driving under the influence of nitrous oxide. And we know that that is a terrible way and terrible method to drive. So other drugs in the system definitely can impair your driving and increase accident risk.
Is it more difficult for law enforcement to determine if someone is under the influence of drugs compared to alcohol?
Yeah, one of the difficulties in this kind of realm of research is that there's no widely accepted kind of test to measure other drugs. So detecting impairment from drugs is definitely harder for law enforcement. Many drugs can actually stay in the system for hours, days, even months. So positive tests may not indicate impairment. But then also the drug landscape is changing. So there's about 400 drugs monitored by the National Highway Transport Safety Association, and everyone has its different levels, different tests, and different thresholds. So while we have really focused on alcohol and marijuana driving, opioids and other drug driving, we are just still kind of in the baby phases of research and testing.
Andrew, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That is Andrew Yockey, an assistant professor of public health at the University of Mississippi. Now to Wisconsin, where Heather Barkholz is doing research to see how THC affects people's performance and response. She's an assistant professor at UW-Madison School of Pharmacy. Heather, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Can you explain these experiments that you're doing to look at how THC affects a person's driving performance?
Yes, of course. We have set up a pilot study to establish the feasibility of dosing human subjects with Delta-9 THC and Delta-8 THC here at UW-Madison. So the primary goal of our pilot study was to set up all of the regulatory infrastructure. So at a federal level, we had to go through the FDA, we had to go through the DEA, and then we also had to go through our institution or UW-Madison's IRB. And our ultimate goal is to better understand how these substances impact people's ability to drive a car and how that relates to traffic safety.
I understand that one person who participated was in a simulated accident. What was their response afterward?
Yes, so a little bit of context. We have a full-scale driving simulator, so it's a four-door vehicle that they drive in, but inside, so they're not actually on the roadway. And we have conflicts set up in the simulation to try to capture how people are responding to things. So if you're driving to work, like many of us did this morning, you may have had somebody jaywalk across the street, and you need to recognize that is happening and stop in time, react. So we have those sorts of things set up. And one of the things in our simulator is that an oncoming vehicle coming towards the simulated driver crosses the center line. So you need to get out of the way to avoid a head-on collision. And a participant did not do anything. They kind of froze and were involved in a simulated head-on crash. And then we want to capture how people are perceiving their behavior. So do they think they did a good job? Do they think they drive safely? And we compare that to the data of what the simulator captured. And so when the individual got out of the vehicle, we ask, how did it go? What do you think of your performance? And they said, oh, it went great. So they were involved in a head-on crash in a simulation, but they said, I did fine. So there's a disconnect, which is really concerning from a traffic safety perspective because we need people to be more on point with where their level is in terms of how safe they're able to drive a vehicle. And there was an obvious disconnect here.
From what you know so far, how is THC impairment different from alcohol or other drugs?
It's primarily in how long the impairment lasts and how much a person feels that impairment. So for ethanol, we've been able to study it, or alcohol, excuse me, we've been able to study it for a very long time. And it's something that's regulated at the federal level, so we can administer it to humans and study the effects in pretty controlled ways, which is different than cannabis. So cannabis has been around for a very long time, but its availability for studies is pretty new. And so what we're seeing is there appears to be, like I just talked about, a disconnect where people are starting to feel better, but their actual measures of their performance haven't actually returned to baseline. So that's an unsafe situation.
Heather, how do you hope your research could be used by law enforcement officers or public health officials?
Great question. We have worked pretty closely with law enforcement officers and agencies and our public health partners to try to capture data that's immediately relevant to them, which is why it was so important that we used the driving simulator from the Traffic Operations and Safety Laboratory here at UW-Madison, because it's a real thing. It's not a computer, like you're not sitting at a desk, you're in a real vehicle. So we feel like the data we're capturing from that is applicable right away to the drivers on today's roadway. And we also had a law enforcement officer come in and do a suite of field sobriety tests around the time of that driving simulation so that they can get some real world data on how their driving performance looks relative to their observations at the roadside.
Heather, what is the next step for your research?
We're envisioning where we want to go. So our pilot was a success in that we were able to administer these substances to humans. We had no serious adverse events, no unexpected problems, which are all really great. It means that anything that we observed was what we expected. So now we're thinking for the future about trying to better understand how cannabinoids relate to alcohol more directly, because that's a model that we all just really understand well. And then what does it look like when people consume alcohol and cannabinoids together?
Heather, thank you for joining us and sharing your research.
Thank you so much.
Heather Barkholz is an assistant professor at UW-Madison School of Pharmacy. Now for a view from law enforcement, we turn to Rob Leischer, a deputy with the Rock County Sheriff's Office. He's been trained to identify people who are under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Deputy Leischer, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me today.
I understand that when you're trying to determine whether a driver is under the influence of drugs or alcohol, you first look at their eyes. What do someone's eyes tell you?
Typically, when we see people's eyes, we're looking at the redness in their eyes, which is caused by vasodilation. Different drug categories cause that, like alcohol, which is a CNS depressant, or your cannabis products. And now with that also, we see, typically we look at different pupil sizes and reaction to lights. Oftentimes when looking into somebody's eyes, you can tell if there's some level of impairment there. Typically what we see is redness in the eyes, which are referred to as bloodshot eyes. You see this by drugs that are CNS depressants or cannabis drugs. What these drugs are is they're vasodilators that opens up the blood vessels in the eyes and cause them to be red. A couple other things we look at when we talk to people on the side of the road is we look at if it is, say, midnight and it's complete darkness outside and their eyes are pinpoint, then that gives us an indicator that they could be on a drug such as a narcotic like fentanyl or heroin. If it's broad daylight and our eyes are dilated, that's a count indicator that they'd be on a drug category as well. Typically, the drugs or the eyes are something that cannot necessarily be controlled by either involuntary muscles. So they work as camera lenses when it comes to lighting conditions. Other drugs actually cause a rare methamphetamine. Your eyes actually should react to the light conditions within 1 second, but these will be slower and kind of act as almost like deflated balloons or as they're deflating.
Other than a person's eyes, you know, when people drive under the influence of alcohol, there is a simple breathalyzer test that can detect that. How difficult is it to determine if someone is under the influence of drugs?
So with drugs, typically, you're not going to get a positive breath result from a preliminary breath test on the side of the road. Typically, though, you'll see alcohol mixed with other drugs. So there's times where you can have somebody that provides a breath sample of a 0.02, which is below the legal limit, but they show signs of impairment during standard field sobriety testing. Typically, we take all these clues that we're seeing during the field sobriety testing, adding them up to determine a probable cause for arrest. With that, for example, if somebody were to drink, say, one shot of vodka and then smoke a cannabis product, you may not have what we call the alcohol impairment, but there's a very high possibility that you would have the drug impairment on the cannabis product. And with the drug impairment, it looks a little bit different than alcohol impairment based on what drug they're doing. Mm. Good example, this is alcohol-impaired drivers have problems with balance and dexterity. They get the slurred speech. And with cannabis products, we see a lot of issues with short-term memory loss. Hmm. That's when we tell them, we give them the instructions for the test. They state that they understand the instructions. They perform the test. During the test, they'll stop during the test and ask questions on how to proceed after they stated they understood. With this also contributes into how the traffic stops are formulated. Typically with alcohol, you'll see the weaving, the swerving, motor vehicle crashes. With cannabis products, we see a lot of altered thought process. So we have an issue with cannabis products of the perception of time and distance. So this is people going through stop signs, stopping after the stop signs. I know Heather talked about during their driving simulator, person's delayed responses to oncoming traffic.
Yeah.
Now, these are often caused by those cannabis products, which often takes a person's ability to multitask out of the equation.
Deputy Leischer, are you seeing more people impaired by cannabis products or other drugs out on the highways?
Yeah, I definitely see an increase in cannabis products with, I guess, the way things are going. Common trends, we see a lot more of the vape pens. We see more different forms of ingestion or different derivatives of the Delta-9 THC. We're also seeing the Delta-8, Delta-O, Delta-10, which are chemically just changed a little bit here, but still cause the impairment. With that, with Rock County being so close to Illinois, a lot of Illinois residents will come into Rock County, and, you know, recreational marijuana is legal in Illinois, and we'll see a lot of those products coming to our state.
Right across the border.
Yes.
As our country becomes increasingly more tolerant of THC, do you think that our roads and our highways are becoming less safe, or can governments legalize it without more traffic accidents and more fatalities?
I believe that anytime we offer more legalization to any products that can impair a person's ability to operate a motor vehicle safely, I believe that does cause a greater safety concern for vehicles on the roadway. Even if it's legal, sometimes people who consume their products assume that they're at home, they can do it, which if it were to be legal, then that'd be fine. However, a lot of the issue is consuming at home, then getting in the motor vehicle, whether it's to drive a mile or drive several hours. Obviously, it impacts a person's ability to operate a motor vehicle safely. So anytime we do that, it creates a major concern for safety on the roadway.
Deputy Leischer, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
That was Deputy Rob Leischer of the Rock County Sheriff's Office. We also heard from researchers Heather Barkholtz at UW-Madison and Andrew Yockey at the University of Mississippi about the impact of drug use on driving.